Good evening and welcome to all of you. My name is Charlotte Ginsburg, and I'm here this evening as a great supporter of the aquarium. I'm also a member of the board of directors. And before we get started, I'd like you to remember to turn your cell phones off, please, and no texting during the presentation. And I'd like to thank our lecture sponsors tonight, the Gazette newspapers. Tonight, I'm pleased to introduce Don Christie and Vicky Mack, and they're going to discuss the history of Portuguese Bend and the Palos Verdes Peninsula, which is very close to us, and I'm sure some of you are very familiar with that area. Don Christie, as a teenager, lived on the Vanderbilt estate. His mother married Frank Vanderlip's son, John, and as a teenager, he moved there and spent 30 years there, fell in love with Palos Verdes and the history of the peninsula. He decided to write a book called Up Around the Bend about the history of Portuguese Bend and Palos Verdes. And he's here this evening to share his book and his history and the love of the peninsula. Vicky Mack is also here to discuss Portuguese Bend and Frank Vanderlip. Vicky was a wedding and portrait photographer, and she's done portraits of six presidents in her former interests, and now she's a book author, and she helped publish Don's book in 2012. And together, Don and Vicky are working on a documentary on Frank Vanderlip and to be on national television. So I'd like to start by introducing Vicky Mack. And at the end of the lecture, we'll have questions and answers. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlotte. It's really nice to be here and see everybody. And I just want to tell you a little bit more about Don right now. I met Don in 2012 when he was living in what's called the Cottage, and that was Frank Vanderlip's original home in Palos Verdes. And he had this amazing interest in history, and as it turned out, I helped him write the book, and he got me actually involved in the Frank Vanderlip story, and which we'll talk about a little bit more later. But I just wanted to tell you about Frank Vanderlip a little, that he was a very learned and amazing man who grew up on a farm and went on to do some things Don will tell you about that are much, much broader than Palos Verdes. And he's not a native Californian, but I think he's part of all of our history now. And he was very proud of developing the area. And of course, he never knew Don because Frank Vanderlip died in 1937. But I think wherever Frank may be these days, he's smiling with a lot of love and affection down on Don for keeping this whole story alive. So, Don.
Thank you very much for coming tonight. I'm Don Christie, and I am the step-grandson of Frank Vanderlip. Frank's youngest son, John, was my stepdad. In 1977, my stepfather, John, was able to purchase the home that he grew up in, which we affectionately know as the Vanderlip Cottage, which was the very, very first house built in Palos Verdes by Frank Vanderlip. Frank Vanderlip was the president of the country's largest bank, now known as Citibank. And what was really interesting is that he went from a poor farmer's son to president of Citibank in six consecutive steps. I don't know about you, but I've had more than six jobs in my life, and God, I could never do something like that. But this man was so intent on learning everything he could that would move him ahead. And one of the things that he was very fortunate to have was a series of mentors who saw his talents, his ambition, his love of hard work, his seriousness, and they took him under his wing and had a great deal of faith and helped this man move up the ladder of success to become the president of Citibank. Frank Vanderlip was also the architect of the founding of the Federal Reserve System and one of the men on Jekyll Island to form it. So this man knew a lot about money. He knew a lot about finance. He learned shorthand at a young age, which really helped him later on in life. He bought Palos Verdes. Next picture, Vicki. This is Palos Verdes before it got developed. This is what Frank saw when he came here to Palos Verdes. He bought Palos Verdes after 10 minutes of meeting with a salesman who came into his office. He had never seen it. He had purchased Palos Verdes, 16,004 acres, for $2.4 million, which broke down to $150 an acre. Well, I think $150 an acre back then would have bought you something. I don't know about today. I was very fortunate when my stepfather, John, passed on in 2001. I went into his office and I found all these beautiful aerial shots that he had never told us about that he had. He was married to my mom for 29 years and he never once brought these pictures out and said, "Hey, Don, take a look at these. These are great, aren't they?" So I found them, and basically what it did is started my interest in Palos Verdes history. Next picture, please. This is what Portuguese Bend used to look like. Portuguese Bend was pretty much composed of Japanese farmers in little huts, a few homes, and they farmed the land. And what Frank did is he did a one-year meteorological study to determine the best place for him to build the home that he wanted to build. Well, he went ahead and did that. Next picture, please. And this is the home. Now, what separates this house from all the other homes that he had built was he painted this one white, and it was a Hudson River design, and all the other homes that he had built were all Tuscan designs. When he built his home up here, there was no electricity, there was no running water, there was no gas. The house was assembled in San Pedro, put together, and came up to Portuguese Bend in carts. And when he had built the home, his wife was crying one day, and he came up to his wife, Narcissa, and said, "Why are you crying, dear?" And she said, "Well, the view isn't quite right." Well, Frank loved his wife a lot, and what he did is he had the house repositioned so the view would be spectacular. I was fortunate enough to live in this home from 1977 to the early 80s when I moved out. Our family owned the home from 1977 until 2012, so we owned it for 35 years. The funny, strange thing about, in terms of the time that we owned the home, we moved in here a week right after Elvis Presley died in 1977, which was the third week of August. I moved out after my mom passed on the third week of August in 2012. So it's almost 35 years to the day. I don't know what you could say about that, but I loved living there. When I moved there as a kid, well, in my early 20s, I used to invite all my friends to come over and we'd have my birthday party. We'd have little summer parties and everybody would come. And we would have wonderful food, parties, we'd swim in the pool, we'd have this ocean view. Well, the problem with having parties there is nobody wanted to leave. Everybody wanted to stay. "Oh, Don, this place is beautiful. Don, look at the ocean view. Look at Catalina. Oh, my God. Hey, Don, can I come and spend the night? Can I call my girlfriend? Can we come here and stay?" No, I'm living here with my mom and my dad. They would not approve of that, but everybody wanted to stay because the house was so beautiful. What I wanted to stress was all these stones that you see here, these were all PV stone. The garden was designed by the Olmsted brothers. We had marble pillars. We had marble fountains. It was just a beautiful place to live. The only problem was it was high maintenance, and guess who got stuck doing the yard work? Yeah, that was me. But it was a beautiful place to live, as you could see. And I just loved living there. It was one of the greatest times of my life. I was very fortunate. Next picture, please. This was our living room. Now, what separates this room from all the other rooms in our house was Frank Vanderlip's wife, Narcissa, went to a Chinese restaurant in San Francisco, and they were remodeling it. And she saw all these beautiful pieces of wallpaper and these red Chinese designs, and she bought them all. And where's my, there it is. You have pieces up here like this, and these are all Chinese. These were all from the Chinese restaurants. And she blended that in with the gold wallpaper, coupled with the fact that we had all these beautiful desks. We had Frank Vanderlip's book collection, the fireplace, and it was a very cozy place to live. It was a home and a house. You go there, and you felt the history. You felt, you know, that you were a part of history, but yet you really appreciated the beauty of the home. Next picture, please. Right after Frank Vanderlip built that home, he built a home right next door. And this house was basically built for his workers, and it was a hallway going through all these rooms. And nobody really had a whole lot of privacy, but I guess he didn't want his workers to have very much privacy. And it was built for the servants that he and the technicians and workers that he had working for him. What was really fascinating about this home, at least to me because I collect old cars, is these were his garages. Well, he had a Cord here, a Duesenberg here, and a Packard there. Okay, the guy had great taste in cars. Right over here is an old gas pump. Can we go to the next picture, Vicki? This is the gas pump that Frank Vanderlip used. So what he would do is he would call on the workers next door and say, okay, today I want to drive my Packard. Would you fill it up? Would you wash it? And this is the pump that they used to pump the gas. It was one of those old gravity-fed pumps that you had a handle and you went like this, and they had the tank underneath. It's still here. Next picture, please. Frank Vanderlip loved horses. He loved animals. And these were the stables that he built. Well, long after he passed, now we have three stables. We have three riding stables and riding clubs in Portuguese Bend. This was the first one, the Portuguese Bend Riding Club. We also now have the Pony Club, and we have an area on what we call the Five Corners where people give disadvantaged children rides on horses. So it's a very much a horse community. You could drive down the street and you see people riding horses and they really enjoy it. It's just a beautiful, quiet place. Next, please. This house here is a fascinating home. This house here was the gatehouse. The gatehouse was built for people who wanted to come and buy 100-acre lots of property in Portuguese Bend. You would come here and you would be served wine, you would be served cheese, and then Frank Vanderlip would take you up into the neighborhood. Why is it echoing? Okay. And he would take you up and he would show you all the property. And this home here was was designed after a chapel in Rome that, next picture please. This is the original design of that home. It was a roadside chapel in Rome where Michelangelo worked when he was painting the Sistine Chapel. So you get a sense of history. Frank loved Tuscan-designed homes. Frank loved Italy, and he brought his love of all this to Portuguese Bend. So I guess you could say that separates a normal neighborhood from what Portuguese Bend is all about. This home now is owned by a famous artist named Dan Pinkham. This house was abandoned for many, many years, and it was owned by many people, and they tear it down with the intention of building it and making it beautiful, but nobody did. Dan Pinkham bought the home in 1996 and restored it. You should see it now. It is absolutely beautiful. And you go in there, and it feels like a chapel. It feels like you're in a church, but none of the uncomfortable seats and nobody telling you about religion. You just go in there, and Dan Pinkham always has music going on. There's tons of books. There's tons of his artwork on the walls. And he decorated this place beautifully with his wife, Vicky. Next picture, please. Well, one of the pieces of history that's important in Portuguese Bend were the investors who invested with Frank Vanderlip. When Frank Vanderlip bought Palos Verdes, he bought it with 49 investors, and one of them was Mr. Levinson. Mr. Levinson built this home, and even though it looks like a normal, regular home, all this here was actually built for his servants. Horses, garage for the cars. Well, he built this home with an intention of building a bigger mansion. Well, his wife said, you know what? I don't like country living. I don't like living out here. So he sold this home, and he never built the mansion that he intended to build. Well, now it's owned by a famous artist named Steve Shriver and his family. And what's great is they share this home with the public every December. They have what's called the Arty Party. And this whole area here, this courtyard, is a big party. It's always the weekend before Christmas. And you have all the artists come from all over, and they show their wares. There's food, there's wine, there's cookies, and you could take walks on the lot. It's beautiful. Every year, this is something I enjoy, and they light up the place in the evening. To me, this is one of the most beautiful parts of Portuguese Bend. Next, please. Well, this is a fascinating home. When Frank Vanderlip had his 49 investors, one of them was his sister named Ruth. Ruth came up to her brother one day and said, you know what, since I invested with you and I'm your sister, I want oceanfront property. Well, Frank was smart. He said, okay, I'm going to give you 48 acres of this oceanfront property. Well, Ruth, his sister, was very bright. She saw the beauty of this, and she wanted to make sure that nothing was ever built around her property. So she was the very first female conservationist of Palos Verdes. Kudos to her. I think she did a great job. Well, now it is owned by Charlotte and Allen Ginsberg. Please stand up. Charlotte and Allen. These are the two new owners now, and these are our new conservationists right now. And it's called now the PV Heritage Castle Museum, and they are doing a beautiful job of keeping this beautiful, beautiful ocean view. You drive by it and you go, I wonder what's on the other side of that. Well, it is gorgeous. You've got a big, beautiful view of the ocean. You can see Catalina. It's probably one of the most desired places in Palos Verdes. Next picture, please. Well, I'm not so sure that Charlotte knew this, but they filmed It's a Mad, Mad World there in 1963. Does that W look at all familiar to any of you movie buffs? Okay. Did anybody know what year of Mad, Mad, Mad World was filmed? You're close. Nope. 1963. Now, what's left of this W is just a little piece of a stub right now after 52 years. But this is what it looked like. Next picture, please. How many people here are from Palos Verdes, if you don't mind me asking? Okay, you've heard stories of the haunted mansion and the ghosts and all that stuff. Okay, what we're going to do tonight is put that to rest. So I'm going to tell you the story. Why? I lived right next door and I saw all the crazies come all hours of the night looking for ghosts, trying to climb the walls, trying to look underneath the gate, looking all over for ghosts. Well, there are no ghosts. But on the internet, they said, oh yeah, there's ghosts. There's dogs that have their voice boxes removed. All this crazy stuff. And I remember when I was in my 20s and I lived at home, you know, you'd be sound asleep and you hear some noisy car coming up the hill. They'd open the doors and the kids would come out and, hey, let's go see if we can find some ghosts. And they walk all over the place and you hear them try to climb the walls. You see them trying to, you know, find some way of getting in the property. The scary part was, is they actually believe that there are ghosts. They actually believe that this is haunted. It's not. I lived next door. I never saw a ghost. I never saw anything that resembled a ghost. But people were so intent in their belief that there's actually ghosts there. So every Friday and Saturday night, you know, when I was living there with my mom and my stepdad, I go, okay, we're going to get the crazies again. And sure enough, we'd be on the patio and we'd watch it. Let me tell you a little bit about the history of this house. Frank Vanderlip built this as a guest house, and originally he had his furniture maker live in this home. Well, it's a pretty nice place for a furniture maker to live. And over time, the history, from what I've heard in history, that Mae West had stayed there many times. Well, it became a guest house for people who would come to visit Frank. And then after Frank died, his middle son, Calvin, would marry Ellen Vanderlip, and they would live here. And this was the first time somebody actually really lived there that belonged to the Vanderlip family. Calvin and Ellen got married in 1951, and Frank's wife, Narcissa, gave this home to them as a wedding gift. Okay. Now, how many of you know about Marineland? Raise your hand, please. Okay. Marineland was here from 1954 to 1987. Calvin's wife, Ellen, was one of the people responsible for Marineland coming into existence. Believe it or not, they were actually going to put Disneyland where Marineland was. Well, the property was too expensive. It wasn't big enough. There was insurance problems, so Ellen arranged for Marineland to come there, and it was one of the greatest things that she ever did. How many of you attended Marineland when it was there? Did you like it? Did you enjoy it? Do you remember that old mold machine that they used to have where you put your quarter in and they'd make you have a porpoise or a dolphin or a shark? I wanted to buy that, never did. Okay. Well, the stories continued, of course, of the ghosts and poor Ellen Vanderlip. I felt sorry for her because she'd have to contend with all the crazies coming all hours of the night. And that was just part of what was there. Next picture, please. This is Villa Francesca. Frank Vanderlip had a right-hand man named Harry Benedict. Harry Benedict was one of the investors with Frank, and he wanted to build himself a home in Portuguese Bend, and this was his house. Well, one of the things that he did was move his family in there. They were very comfortable. Now, take a look at that. That looks like a nice, big, beautiful home. Believe it or not, he had intentions of building a bigger mansion right next to it, but because of the stock market crash in 1929, couldn't and didn't. He raised his kids there. He died in 1977. I was lucky. I had the pleasure of meeting the man in 1977, a very smart man. And he told me a little bit about Frank Vanderlip when I was just a young man. The property has stables. It has corrals. And you've got other little living arrangements that you really can't see until you go in there. It's a beautiful place. People right now have their horses there, their stables that they go there every day and they feed their horses, and they go riding. And the home is really beautiful, but take a good look. There's the cracking, the landslide. Next picture, please. This is something that's very near and dear to my heart. It's called the Duck Pond. The Duck Pond was Frank's big love of birds. Frank had 500 birds on this 5.5-acre lot. Right here are the two cages. How many have seen peacocks and Palos Verdes? How many have been woken up by them screaming and yelling? We could thank Frank Vanderlip. Would you like to hear the story of how this all happened?
Yes.
There we go. Okay, here's how it works. Frank already had his 500 birds. He had a big aviary. He just loved birds. He would go down there. He even built a home for what he called his bird doctor, so he could take care of all of the birds, and Frank would come down there and pet them and love them and everything. Well, somebody came and said, you know, Frank, Portuguese Bend is just too doggone quiet. You need something to liven the place up. So a woman named Anita Baldwin came and brought these two cages full of peacocks, plus two albino peacocks. Well, the albino peacocks mated with the other peacocks, so the peacocks that we have now are not really pure in bloodline. They're a little bit of a mix. And these peacocks drive me crazy, okay? I live in Portuguese Bend, and I can't tell you how many times at 4:30 in the morning I hear this, wah! Sounds like a tortured cat. And what is it? It's a peacock on the roof. One of the funny things that happened to me years ago, I was walking, and there was these two male peacocks trying to court this one female peacock. And she didn't want to have a whole lot to do with either one. She was looking for a way out, and this one was blocking her. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. She came behind one of them and bit him in the butt. And he went, bah! Like that. And I said to myself, now here's a female peacock with a sense of humor. I got the biggest kick out of that. So now you know the little story of the peacocks. Okay, next picture, please. Here we go. Here's Frank Vanderlip with his aviary. Now, I want you to take a look at the picture of the duck pond. It looks like it's going up, doesn't it? Take a look at the picture. Look at that. It looks like it's aiming up at the sky, but it really isn't. That's an optical illusion. This is the little bird hospital back here where Frank's bird doctor would be taking care of the sick birds. So he just loved all these birds. He would come down and visit them and love them, and those were his pets. The peacocks were the only birds that he owned that he let run free. The other ones were all in cages. Next picture, please. Anybody have any idea what this is? Anybody have any ideas at all? This is the mansion that Frank Vanderlip was going to build. Now, there's a couple interesting stories behind all this. Frank Vanderlip came from a farming family, and he grew up with farms, with animals, loved birds. And when he came to Palos Verdes, he met with all the Japanese farmers, and he became friends with them. They liked him, he liked them. And he had a great deal of respect for the Japanese farmers. They would lease land from him, and he would help them. He would set up little areas where they could sell their extra fruits and vegetables and what have you. Well, William Hearst didn't like the Japanese. He very much disliked them, and in his newspapers, he would degrade them publicly. They were bad people, they were this, they were that, and that really angered Frank because he really liked the Japanese. So what he did is when he designed this mansion that he was going to build. It was going to be bigger than the Hearst Castle, so he could go like this to William Hearst. Well, if you take a look, it is really beautiful, very Italian, very Tuscan in design, the landscaping by the Olmsted brothers. He had an alley going up there with cypress trees. It was absolutely gorgeous. Unfortunately, he was never able to build this, and none of the mansions were able to be built in Portuguese Bend because of the stock market crash in 1929. If the stock market crash in 1929 never happened, we would have four mansions in Portuguese Bend. And one of them was going to be on Charlotte Ginsburg's property on the point. It was going to be a 56-room mansion on this point going out to the ocean. Can you imagine how beautiful that would be? Didn't happen. Next picture, please. This is kind of a bittersweet story. This is Portuguese Bend Beach Club. Well, Calvin, Frank's middle son, decided he wanted to make a beautiful little community called Portuguese Bend Beach Club with a bunch of small little homes here. And he had a clubhouse, swimming pool, and one of my favorite places was the pier. Well, he built it. He had great success. But what happened is Hawthorne Boulevard didn't come all the way up. Hawthorne was still way down in Torrance. So what they did is they wanted to bring Crenshaw up to the top of the hill and down into Portuguese Bend so people had access to it. Big mistake. What that did is cause a landslide. And all these homes here, combined with the fact that they watered their plants and they had sewage and they had septic tanks. And think of a cake. When you have a cake with frosting, what happens? You could slide the top part right off from the bottom part. And that's basically what happened here in Portuguese Bend. So all these homes here were all lost. And there were homes up above and on the other side of PB Drive that were lost too. And this was sad because now this is all nothing. But this is what the Portuguese Bend Beach Club looked like in the 50s. Now I want to share a story with you. When I was 13 years old, you had your rites of passage, and your rites of passage, of course, was to do something stupid, but we called it brave. And what we would do is we would come and hike down here, and this is 1968, so we would come here to what's left of the pier, and we would jump off the top. Well, I had no idea, number one, that it was 40 feet above the water. I had no idea that the water was so cold. Well, here I am, a stupid 13-year-old. What do I know? I jumped it. And let me tell you something. I will never, ever do it again. You couldn't pay me, even at 13, to do it again. That water was cold. That water was hard. And when you land in the water, it was deep when you went down. Also, that pier was very, very rickety. The next year, it had collapsed. But this is what Portuguese Bend Beach Club looked like originally. Next picture, please. Well, what happened was Calvin passed on in 1956, and there were still homes across the street in the Portuguese Bend neighborhood, and many of them did not endure the slide. Many of them just slid, and people said, oh, I can't do anything. I'm just going to let it slide, literally. That was a good pun, wasn't it? Yeah, I like that. Oh, I think I'm clever. Anyway, there were still homes that were left over, and this is one of them. So what the people did is they decided, well, the view is beautiful. This is such a great area to live. I'm going to do everything in my power to keep this my home. Well, this is one of the homes. Take a look. It's all jacked up. They have all kinds of, like, this guy here has a tractor, and what he does from time to time, he raises the home up, puts blocks, he puts all kinds of stones, wood, everything he can to keep this house from sliding. Well, take a look at it. It looks kind of old and rickety. This house was probably built in the late 40s, early 50s, but boy, let me tell you, talk about one heck of a beautiful ocean view. And you drive by it, and you go, oh my God, you know, this is somebody who really loves living here. This is somebody who really wants to stay here. And there's quite a few homes. Originally, there was close to 100 homes in this area of Portuguese Bend, but many of them had slid and nobody really cared to keep them. Well, one of the things that the slide had done to the Portuguese Bend neighborhood was split it in two. You have the east side where all the homes had were sliding, and then you had the west side where the homes weren't sliding. So there was a little division in the neighborhood per se. And it's different. So when you drive up, there's two entrances. There's one where there's Pepper Tree and there's Narcissa. Excuse me a second. Uh-oh. Excuse me. So if you come up Pepper Tree, it's the landslide area, and you drive up Pepper Tree and the road goes like this. You come up Narcissa, it's a smooth road. There's a little bit of bumpiness, but there's no real slide, but it's very evident about these homes that these homes have slid. And it kind of adds character. There's still dirt roads there. And one of the things that I really enjoy is driving down these roads, because you're driving down the road and you see remnants of what used to be. You see these old homes, you see the beautiful views, you see old cars, old tractors that people are still driving and still using to keep these homes alive. And one of the things that add character to this neighborhood are these old homes. And I've been inside of them, and you could tell that they were built in the 50s, but the views are fantastic. Now, next picture, please. Portuguese Bend is one of those areas that time exists in a funny way. You go there, your cell phones barely work. You go there, there's dirt roads. There's fossils, there's Indian artifacts. Every once in a while you get lucky and you see a little piece of something from the Japanese farmers. Almost all the trees in the neighborhood came from Frank Vanderlip. Frank Vanderlip was like a Johnny Appleseed. He grew 150,000 trees in Palos Verdes, but they all started here in Portuguese Bend. What makes Portuguese Bend also unique is this is where Palos Verdes history started. This is where Frank Vanderlip came, settled in, built homes. He did a lot to make this neighborhood beautiful and unique, and it's still that way. Now, for the first time, unfortunately, we're able to build homes, and there's a few new homes, but almost all the homes there were built in the 50s or earlier. And this is almost like an area where time had forgot. You go there and you see the trees. They're old, they're beautiful. Most of them are pepper tree and eucalyptus trees. And this is Vanderlip Drive going up to the Vanderlip homes. And I'm lucky because I live up at the top of this, and this is what I come up to every day. This is what I drive down every day. February and March are the great months, because what happens is these trees come and cower down on you like this. And you're driving up, it's a little foggy and a little wet, and you say to yourself, wow, I'm part of the history of this. This is beautiful. Where else in California can you get this? Well, here it is. The Vanderlip family had donated a lot of the property to the Land Conservancy, where now you can go on nature hikes. And some of those areas are old Japanese farmland where the Ishibashis came. The Ishibashis were there before the Vanderlips moved there, and they had a lot of farmland. And every once in a while, you can find a little remnant of like an old plow, an old tool, something very primitive that the Japanese used for their farming. I want to go back for a second because there's something I did forget, and I want to make sure I give Frank Vanderlip his due. Frank Vanderlip was the architect and the founding of the Federal Reserve, and one of the men who met on Jekyll Island to form it. This man was brilliant. This man had such a mind for numbers. And this was a man who was very driven, but yet he loved his family. He loved the property. He loved farming. He loved his birds. He had a great deal of passion for the things that he loved in his life. And you can kind of see it in Portuguese Bend. This is just not your normal neighborhood. This neighborhood has a lot of history. Whether you look at the architecture, you look at the landslide, you see any artifacts, you talk to people who live there, and believe it or not, this year there was a man who just celebrated his 99th birthday. How many people do you know who are 99 years old? Very few. And this man had lived here since 1949, and his house had slid 85 feet. He got some railroad track, got a tractor, pulled it back up. That's the kind of people we had in Portuguese Bend, people who had a great deal of love for this area because they knew it was unique. They knew it was beautiful. They knew that they could never find another place like this. Vicki and I talked about this several times after we got to know each other. Once you're in the neighborhood, you don't want to leave. You want to stay there. It's just so beautiful. So what if your cell phone doesn't work? You know, so what if you drive over a pothole? So what if you're on a bumpy road and your car goes clunk? Doesn't matter. It's beautiful. This is one of those great areas that you just love living in if you're lucky. If you're not so lucky, hey, come on up and take a drive through there. It's absolutely beautiful. I want to thank all of you for coming today. I want to thank all of you for coming and listening to me. And I hope I can answer some questions that any of you have about Portuguese Bend.